found this in Gunnerum. Gunnermir Ni.
What is it?
Well, it's sycophants.
Welcome to Synthaholics, guys. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is...
Aaron O'Brien.
And...
Faith Hertzberg.
And today, the Con Saga continues! Con!
We are talking about the armpit. No, it's not the armpit, but it's not great. The Into the Darkness.
Star Trek Into Darkness.
Yeah.
But first, this week is the week of Star Trek Las Vegas.
Yeah, so if you're in Vegas...
This week as in the day we're recording it. You'll be hearing this well after it's over.
If you're in Vegas, we're all jealous of you.
Lucky, lucky bastards.
We're stuck here.
The wonderful people at Destructor Beam have a booth.
If there's a convoy.
What was that, Faith?
I say if they manage to sober up, there's actually the con going on.
Yeah, right. whoa. There's Klingons in here.
Our friends at Destructor Beam, who we've had on the show before, they're actually having a booth at the Las Vegas convention. And in one of the recent online promos on their YouTube channel, they've had John DeLancey, Mr. Q himself, mm-hmm. on there. And I think he's also supposed to be around their booth during the con. And so that makes me think that maybe Q's involved with this somehow. And I'm hoping we can ask them about it once beta comes out. Maybe they'll be more forthright with information. We can have them back on.
They'll tell us some more.
I'm like, why would he be sponsoring it if his character wasn't in it, you know? So
yeah, that's a good question.
So I think that's some interesting tidbits. And hopefully after Star Trek Las Vegas, we'll have a release date. Maybe that's their big thing. They'll let us know a release date and or a beta date.
It would be cool. Would be very cool.
I can't think of any other Star Trek news. There's just been a couple new Omaze videos for the Omaze Star Trek thing where you can, you know, donate money and have a chance to be in the film.
Right, right. Yeah. It's pretty much the same as before.
Yeah, it benefits like six or seven different causes. They split up the money and it's a really neat philanthropic endeavor with a chance to show up in Star Trek.
It's not bad. So, going back to this remake, we have the Khan. This is the second in the J.J. Abrams movies for Star Trek.
It's funny. We haven't, really, really talked about them. We've, mentioned them here and there. And we're just going with this one because we've been talking about Spacey and Wrath of Khan. Well, let's get Khan out there. Let's just do all of Khan in one shot.
Right.
I'm going to preface this episode with I actually enjoy the movie, but after listening to it, you may not think I do, because the movie does have lots of holes in it, but it's a really fun film, and it's easy to get caught up in it, because it does flow really well, and it almost, to me, I didn't feel like it was the length it was, the full 2 hours, because it was just so fun, and it just was almost nonstop action.
It is eye candy, and there's a lot of, everything looks pretty cool. I mean, obviously the actors and actresses are all good looking, the sets look great, costumes look great, I mean, everybody looks good. I mean, the whole thing looks good. It's just that when you start breaking down some of the things that are actually happening in the story, you're like, what? Wait a second.
Well, that's why the movie moves so quick. I mean, there's a couple of things in the movie that are explained in the novelization, which I listen to through Audible. Alice Eve reads the book, and there's a couple of things that they go into that they didn't go into in the film that would have slowed down the pacing. So J.J. Abrams just pulled it. So pacing would have to slow down. So instead of explaining things, Strucky's would be like, oh, okay, well, I guess, they explained it with technobabble. Since they removed the technobabble to keep the pace of the film up, Star Trek nerds get a little bit upset at some of the things that happened in the film.
I can see that a little bit, but it is a relatively short movie, too.
It's 2 hours.
Yeah. Most movies these days goes way over 2 hours.
No.
There's a ton of movies out there.
Most movies average 90 minutes. Your action movies are going to be your 2 hour thing. But things that aren't action movies are 90 minutes or less. And even some action movies are only 90 minutes. I mean, like your Avengers, there's almost 3 hours because you've got like 16, 20 characters you got to give some screen time to, so it's going to be longer because of the amount of characters are in it.
Right, right.
I wish they'd make a 3-hour Star Trek movie, but wait, I don't think we've come anywhere near close. I mean, most Star Trek movies clock in at about 2 hours.
Right. All right, well, should we get started?
With the plot. So, there's a red planet named Nibiru.
So, we start off, there's a... we see this nice, picturesque red planet.
Nice little pyramid and three little paths right in the middle.
And somebody's running out, a lot of yelling. And of course, this is Jim Kirk stealing some ancient artifact of, I don't know, we lost Faith.
She's back.
She went back.
You all right? You there?
Yeah, no, I'm still here. Right.
There's some subspace transmission signal being blocked. I think Admiral Marcus doesn't want to hear us talking about the movie.
Yeah.
The ship's cat accidentally stepped on the console and she's been ejected. So she'll be staying in the airlock until further notice.
Until she shot up the Vengeance.
Right. Well, just don't hit the red button, guys. Just right. No red button.
Well, So Kirk has stolen some artifact. They're running out. He meets up McCoy.
Shoots their beast ride, which I'm confused as to why he shot the beast ride. I would have assumed it was part of the plan that they would ride the beast.
It looked like it was attacking him. I would have shot first and asked questions.
Yeah, it did, but I mean, didn't they talk about the plan?
I don't think they talked about it.
I don't think they'd gotten that far. He just said, hey, I'm going to get us a ride.
Yeah, but, yeah. And... meanwhile, while they're running, is you have the shuttlecraft with Sulu.
The next three main characters.
Uhura and Spock. And they're in a volcano, and they're going to detonate a cold fusion bomb.
But the thing is, cold fusion isn't actually cold. It's still very, very hot.
And
because it's fusion.
Right, right. So they're going to drop Spock down in a spacesuit. And he's going to drop in, and they're going to – because what's going to happen is apparently this is like one of these mega volcanoes. It's going to kill all the
– it'll wipe out the world.
Yeah, it'll just destroy all the civilization. So here we have the first infraction of a prime directive. They're literally going to interfere with the
natural ecosystem of
the evolution
world.
Of this society.
Okay. Which Spock doesn't even have a problem with.
Well, let's not get to the prime directive yet because it's not even mentioned at this point. Well, it sort of is, but I mean, like, it doesn't really come up until
that. Yeah, they tease with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and then like it's Admiral Pike that kind of reams them a little bit about breaking the prime directive.
Right, right. But I'm just saying, this is hypocrisy.
But okay, but Kirk's like, oh, I'm covered up. They don't know I'm somebody else.
Right. You know, no, I'm willing to give that a little wiggle room, but with Spock's logic and purism. I would think he would be a little bit like, no, that's not good. But anyways, so they're doing that, and they're going to drop Spock down into this volcano to detonate this device. Meanwhile, McCoy and Kirk are running, and they are getting they get to this cliff, and they jump off into the water, which, strangely enough,
doesn't kill them.
Doesn't kill them, but strangely enough, they have the Enterprise underwater. Why it's underwater?
Underwater.
I mean, it's cool that it's underwater, but it doesn't make a lot of sense why they parked the Enterprise underwater.
Well, they couldn't get a site-to-site transport from space to the volcano. I guess it was too far to transport with the magnetic beams, and also it'd be easier to get a shuttlecraft, I guess, in and out from the water than orbit. This doesn't make any sense.
I get the logistics, but I mean, seriously, it was still very much a Sequest flashback for me. It's like, yeah. This is not worth this.
But it was a beautiful shot of the Enterprise up close and seeing the underneath of them, seeing them swim up to it.
It was very pretty.
I'm not disagreeing that it does look cool underwater, but it has no feasible reason.
That was
to
messed
be.
Up, though.
Because it's not Voyager, it can't land on land.
it's the only way
they can land it on the planet,
and that's in this version of Enterprise is much larger than the Constitution class too. They're very bigger.
It's not that much bigger.
It's pretty big.
Well, like if you look at the, like, there's lots of dispute on how big the ship is. The ship is a little bit bigger than the original one. It's probably maybe just a little bit bigger than the refit.
And I
the
original refit. And I can't make heads or tails of the interior of what's going on.
The innards don't make sense. Like the innards make the ship a lot bigger than it is, but if you look at the deck structure and like how the windows go, like it's not that much bigger because it's got about the same number of decks in the saucer section if you look at it from the outside. It's like a TARDIS. It's like way bigger on the inside.
It's not the size of the ship that matters. It's whether or not it fulfills its function.
There you go.
No, but there's the logical fallacy of like, but the bridge is huge. I mean, the bridge is like 10 times bigger than the Enterprise D bridge.
Faith, I think somehow that you've had to deliver that line before.
I've had to sell a few of you guys before.
Pat him on the head. All right, so
okay, guys,
can you make it work right? I don't care how large. Just make it.
Here's a Band-Aid. You'll be fine.
So they're into the Enterprise, and Spock is going down to the volcano. But
his line breaks.
He falls down. The shuttlecraft suddenly cannot handle either the heat. The soot or something's going on that they have to leave.
They complain about the heat, and actually me and Aaron were talking about this earlier today, and I was like, volcanoes can't be that hot. I'm sure the space heat fluctuates to a hotter degree than a volcano, and I actually did a little bit of research on this today, and I found out that volcanoes, you know, average usually between 800 and 1,100 degrees Kelvin. I mean Celsius.
Celsius, right?
And the spacesuits that the guys spacewalk in at NASA only can withstand about 130 Celsius.
Well, I'm assuming this is a more beefed up.
With cold right now than anything because we don't have the technology available to us right now.
Well, I mean, I'm not complaining about Spock's suit. I mean, it's future and they've got a suit. I'm just concerned at why the ships aren't able to withstand this much. But then, you know, looking at the space station like only supposed to withstand like 200 Kelvin. So I guess from our distance from
Kelvin?
The sun, I mean Celsius. I'm sorry. All
right.
Like 200 something degrees Celsius. So
yeah,
it just seems that like that
it seems like it should be higher, but then again, these things aren't exactly designed for constant reentry either.
Because
atmosphere is another issue as well.
And then there's, you know, I also looked up how hot Mercury was, and Mercury is only about 400 Celsius. And I know Venus gets a lot hotter, but I was looking for like close proximity to the sun. So still, even we're only like at half. Even if you're that close to the sun, you're still only looking about half of the heat of a volcano. So, I mean, this really could be a problem if they're not worried. Because starships probably wouldn't be flying close to suns that often.
Well, they do it a lot. Anyways.
That's what metaphasic shielding's for.
Exactly. Take that, Dr. Crusher. Got a whole thesis written on that one. So anyways, Spock is down in the volcano. They jet, and they go back to the Enterprise.
I love how everyone's got a swimsuit built underneath what their current clothes are.
Right.
Because, you know, McCoy and Kirk had one, even though they were going to take a land animal back and then the shuttle back, but they had to abandon the shuttle. So they also had a backup swimsuit that they were wearing with, like, the...
Right.
Like fin, like the jet
and,
propellers,
and they
ankles.
Really had to swim really far. They didn't just like go up to the saucer section and just like get in there. They went like way
they went to the
down.
Very bottom of the ship.
Yeah, I was like, that's holding your breath a long time.
I'm sure they had little rebreathers or something like the Jedi did.
And the pressure, like just the pressure of going that far.
Your ears would be popping like crazy, and so. So they're all on the ship except Spock. Spock is waiting for his glorious demise. He can't wait to die.
He's so excited. He puts his hands up in a Jesus pose.
He's like, please
kill me. A kneeling Jesus pose. And Jim's like, what would Spock do? And McCoy's like, he'd let you die. He's like, well, I'm going to do the exact opposite of that. And they take the ship out of the water.
And they fly right over all the aliens. They can see them in plain sight. They go to the volcano and they get in transporter beam range.
It's not range; it's got to be line of sight, and it's got to be close line of sight.
Yeah, because that's how transporters always work.
Well, it's just it's magnetic interference. I mean, I when you have the core of a planet, it shoots out magnetic things, and if you've got a volcano, you're probably a more direct
They do this all the time. This one's made
volcanoes. What?
Anyway,
but there's always a pseudoscience technobabble thing that they explain, but they didn't really explain it very much right. In the film, which they do in the book.
Okay, so still no sense to be underwater. I'll concede slightly that maybe that was the issue with the transporter, because transporters can be a little wonky.
Transporters do whatever the writers want them to do or don't want them to do.
Right, exactly. So there you go. They get Spock out. Spock's like, you let him see us. And he's like, so what? They saw us.
And this leads to the best crossover scene I've ever seen in a movie. Like, I love this crossover scene. The guys are drawing the ship in the dirt. Mm-hmm. And as they're drawing it, it starts to fade into space. And you see the Enterprise like in the exact same. I love that crossover shot.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, I can't think of a movie where I've seen a more beautiful crossover shot. That's filled me with like such happiness, because it's not Star. It's Star Trek. And the music going, and it's just that's a beautiful, like, 5 seconds.
It's interesting that it did nothing for me.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
If it works for you, it works for you. It's just, I mean, it didn't offend me. I was just like, okay. It's, like, nice.
That's neat. That's moving nice. On.
Yeah. No, it's cool. You like it. Sorry. It wasn't my thing.
Yeah, I liked it. Like, it was pretty cool, but I'm a little numb to stuff like that anyways, because I spend a lot of time looking at pretty pictures and video games and stuff, so.
Well, I mean, so do I. I'm a huge gamer and things like that, but it's just the way it crossed, there was a crossfade. It was beautiful.
You don't have to defend it. You
it
like
was
it.
Beautiful, man!
It's all right.
I haven't drunk that much yet.
So, they're back. They head back. They get back to Earth, and what's the next scene?
As soon as the Enterprise goes in the warp drive, an alarm clock goes off. It's a really old, shitty looking analog alarm clock.
Makes no sense.
It looks like Khan wakes up, but that's not Khan.
That's Mickey. That's Mickey from Doctor Who. What's he doing there, young Mickey? Oh. You Doctor Who.
He's designing the Enterprise to be like a TARDIS, so that it's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside.
I got stuck in this universe, Doctor. I have a daughter who's sick.
No, but he says two lines. It's like, what did you say, and who are you? That's the only thing he gets to say. And
yeah, he is in Doctor Who quite a bit. He plays this one of the Doctor's companions' boyfriend, and he has a pretty prominent role in the earlier seasons of Doctor Who. So, but it was kind of cool to see him, because I'm a Doctor Who fan, and I saw it and I was like, oh, that's cool. He got a small part.
Yeah, he wakes up next to his wife and his dog, and
they're going to the hospital. They're driving, strangely,
and the cool little hover car. I feel like they spent a whole lot of money like on this couple of scenes.
Yeah,
for the hover car and that hover bed, like. For just really like quick stuff.
I think
stuff.
They're just trying to make you identify with them, that this is like, this is a real couple, and this is just like you or me, but like
how important it really is.
Yeah,
and give you like a sense of what it feels like to be in their shoes.
And family. I mean, it's well done. It makes you kind of feel for them.
Right.
Almost no dialogue.
My feeling.
Yeah, they do get you in the feels pretty good.
My feeling was, why do they drive when you could just beam to the hospital? That was one thought for me. And the other thought was, what was I going to say? The hospital, the doctors just let him put that serum in there. And nobody, like, questioned it.
Nobody. Well, he did it. I think in the book he was like, he came, like, really, really early. Like, on the day he comes. Because it's a separate day where he puts in the serum. It's not serum. It's just straight up blood.
Right. Well, so their daughter's has some fatal disease. They don't really explain what it is.
There's literally no dialogue. It's just like, I can save her, and then he goes, what did you say? And then he says, who are you? There's like no. It's just some debilitating disease. It looks like she's aging really fast. She's like losing her hair and it's turning gray.
She just looks sick. And then they have. They give you the shot of Khan for the first time.
John Harrison.
Yeah.
Senior John Harrison.
And he gives him, obviously, some portion of his blood that he can revitalize the girl, because obviously Khan's platelet is a miracle drug. And then He works for the young father works for
Section 31.
Section 31, which isn't really explained yet, but they'll get into it later. And he makes a deal with John Harrison Khan that he's going to blow up his
headquarters.
Which this is the part where it's like, why wouldn't he just like report that? Hey, this guy named John Harrison gave me the serum, made my daughter better, and then he asked me to blow up Section 31.
John Harrison's also known in Section 31, and he's one of the more
badass.
Yeah, but people know him. I think people know who he is.
He didn't know who he was.
He
was like, "Who are you?"
Maybe they've heard his name because maybe he told them his name after it cut.
Ah, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, plot hole definitely there because they didn't have a foundation for it, and it wasn't very well explained.
He's also following him around, and so I mean, he seems threatening, you know. No matter what, he's like
he does work for Section 31,
but like he's like standing right outside the door when he goes to blow up this thing. So does he just book it as soon as he like runs in? Because it looks like it blows up a block.
Yeah, he's having coffee like a street and a half away.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on, but all I can say is that I would think that this guy, he works for Starfleet, Section 31, which is like, you know, a big deal to probably just be part of. And then he
sends an email to Admiral Marcus.
Says, "Oh, by the way, I did this.
Yeah, I did this. Please don't disgrace my family."
Right. So he blows up this huge section in London. It's actually it seems
disguised as an archive.
Yeah, it seems pretty horrific because it seems like a couple thousand people die from this. So it's kind of like
you hear lots of screaming.
It has a reminiscent of like a 9/11 kind of feel.
Well, you know? Get more 9/11 at the end whenever whenever the ship bulldozes like 16 buildings.
Well, I wasn't going to get into that, but yet
jumping ahead.
But they get. So that takes place, but in the meantime, in between this, Kirk is pulled up in front of Pike, and he asks what happened on the planet. And Kirk's command is basically revoked.
I love how Spock gives Pike a bunch of sass, and then he gets to leave. I thought that was funny. That was kind of fun. A funny part. I enjoyed.
I just felt that was like so juvenile for Spock.
It was also done logically too. So it was. I thought it was kind of funny.
It was
I'm expressing when he's attitude simultaneously. To which you're referring?
Yeah.
I thought that was awesome.
Yeah.
And then Spock gets dismissed. And then like Pike starts going on about this thing about how Kirk like put every single one of his crew in danger. I'm like, unless the Nibirans are more deadly than we thought, I'm not sure how he almost got his entire crew killed.
Well, they were down on the planet. The planet, this volcano was a super volcano was going to go like a kablooey. He's got a ship underwater. There's a lot of things that probably could have gone wrong here that didn't need to be.
But like, I didn't feel like the planet was supposedly in danger. But I didn't feel they were in danger really.
Well, Spock was. They put the shuttle in the volcano's
mouth. But Pike
said
the entire crew could have died. I'm like,
they could have. They could have.
Like if a Klingon could have gone early, the ship could have gotten trapped. It could have gotten crushed. Everybody could have.
A couple Klingon ships could have come out of nowhere and tried to blow them up.
No, that's not the point. He's violated the Prime Directive. He shouldn't have done what he did. He shouldn't have put up the cold fusion bomb.
But Kirk's got a point. Like in the first movie, like Pike literally picks him up because he breaks the rules.
Breaks the rules, right?
And because he's not in the mold, and now he's chastising him for exactly doing what he praised him for in the first movie.
But the Prime Directive is one of the most important. It's the Prime Directive.
But you saw how volatile he was. He's picking bar fights in Podunk, Iowa.
Well,
for
you can't expect to command to temper a man. It just doesn't work sometimes.
Well, and
I don't. Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure what he was really expecting out of Kirk.
I think he expected more. And then, secondly,
that's a given.
And I think Pike was right. I don't think that this version of Kirk doesn't have his father and a father figure in his life to help mold him because his father was an officer that he knew in the other universe. He didn't have that, so we have a different version of Kirk that's probably a little more rambunctious, a little more rebellious, and
immature.
Yeah, and we don't see, and this is obviously a younger Kirk as well. as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But, so we don't have like a more tempered Kirk. And I actually thought that this was at this point, Chris Pine has his emotional reaction to the Enterprise being taken away from him, I thought was very well done. You could almost see that he's going to cry. Like his face becomes flush with this in the scene. Like, you know, this is like he's choking. Like he can't believe this is actually happening.
I mean, the acting in the movie's solid. It's just. I think most of our complaints about this in this episode are going to be like how the writing was handled.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, I think actually most of the actors are very capable, and I was very a couple points with this one scene when Pike takes the Enterprise away from him. I was like, wow, that's actually some very good acting. It's not over the top, and it's not
It was right on.
Yeah, it was just like exactly
perfectly believable. It was like, dude, that is how I would look if that happened.
Yeah,
to me.
Yeah. Like you're gonna cry, you're gonna vomit, you don't know how
you want to hit something.
Yeah,
all at once.
Well,
every
trying to hold it all together. Yeah,
it's. I mean, it's really cool. Although I didn't get like I wish they would have left out the you're going back to the academy bit because that's resolved in the next 2 minutes. I'm just kind of like I just felt that was a little too much in the writing because it's just like, why are you going to threaten to send him back to the academy and then not even like come close to following it through? Just like you're going to get demoted.
Right.
I mean, that's a pretty big punishment, in itself. But going back to the academy only to have that reneged like 2 minutes later in the next scene, I'm just kind of like, why?
It's realistically, they probably thought through and they were like, oh shit, we don't want him to come back.
Right. Well, and
like
then,
the cadets are going to follow.
Right. Yeah. So he's disgraced, and Spock is obviously kind of ignorant what's going on right at the moment. And then the next thing we have Kirk
getting drunk.
Kirk getting drunk, of course,
because that works.
So we can have him become first officer,
right? And it's a good scene too. Pike and him. I think him and the Pike scenes, even in the first movie, are very, very.
Bruce Greenwood's a great actor. I love him as Pike. I'm really pissed that they kill him in this movie because we can't get Pike in the next movie unless it's like a flashback.
Well, it's cool because we see Pike more as a father figure all of a sudden to Kirk, which obviously. In the original series, we don't ever see any interaction between Pike and Kirk other than him in the wheelchair.
Beep. Beep, beep. Beep.
But Pike has, has this, like, very...
Beep.
Beepy relationship with him. I like the dynamic they have. He's got this father figure that he's kind of filled in the role for Kirk, which Kirk sorely needs.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. I like the relationship, and I'm really sad they didn't get to do a whole lot with it this one because he dies so early, and then he's dead.
Well,
so we can't
definitely
get it
a means to temper Kirk because like that gave them the means for him to actually chill and calm down and start thinking things through a little bit better, which he didn't have that yet.
Right.
Yeah.
I was kind of hoping to see a Last Crusade kind of like movie with him and Pike, goofing off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't believe you shot those people.
that would have been awesome.
So, anyways, you call this archaeology.
I'll show you who's being impressed.
So. Why do we do that? Anyway, so they get the call from the Daystrom Institute that they have to assemble, and this is after the bombing of Section 31. They have a big staff meeting. This is another thing that doesn't make a lot of sense. Why does the staff all meet in one like central location, like a city, instead of like some bunker where they can't be like. Bombed. I mean,
No, I understand the meeting. Why don't they have security?
Oh, yeah.
That's my question.
Yeah.
The meeting, I understand. Earth is basically utopia.
Oh, no. Yeah, no. So, I get that, too.
I understand not meeting in a bunker. Earth's pretty much a utopia. Mm. But you do know this crazy guy's on the loose. So why don't you have, like, some security nearby, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Monitoring your airspace, perhaps?
Right.
Have guns that can shoot down a bigger ship and not just people?
Yeah.
They
know this crazy bastard's running around.
And Kirk's the only one that puts it together.
Yeah.
And at the last minute.
And Admiral Marcus, as we later discover, is like the whole orchestra
of
this entire thing.
He's
so
behind
it all,
and he's kind of hiding a lot. Yeah.
Unless he wanted a whole bunch. He probably did. He probably wanted them to get shot.
I don't think he wanted that. I don't think he wanted that, because that's some of his top brass. No,
but
it gave him the motivation.
It gave him the authority to do a manhunt.
Maybe.
Because of that. So maybe he did want them to have this to happen. Yeah.
Well,
I mean, he couldn't have. God, we're doing a manhunt, pure and simple. I'm sure some people probably had their doubts in the conference, or we just didn't hear it. But now that a whole bunch of them got killed,
right,
the next time he brings it up, it's like, well, this happened.
Right. Exactly. Well, and then
RoboCop.
Yeah. So yeah, Peter Weller, which is he's obviously RoboCop.
Admiral RoboCop.
He actually, and he was in Enterprise 2 and Terra Nova.
Yeah, I think Terra Nova.
And it was a 2-part series.
Yeah, I was really kind of hoping that he would be playing a descendant of his character on that show, but he's not.
No, but he's a great actor, and he's just that. I mean, in RoboCop, he plays more of the good guy, but in this, he's obviously a gigantic asshole. So, Admiral Marcus, is there conducting it when Khan has this airship flies up and just starts just unloading his payload into this group of admirals and captains.
But instead of evacuating, everyone tries to lay on the ground. Well. I'm not sure.
Just hit the deck kind of thing.
Because it seems like Kirk got out of there really quick. Why didn't they all get out of the room?
Kirk's always going to get out of there quick. And Spock's just dragging bodies. Spock's just dragging bodies off to the corner. And then
he only mind rapes Pike, though.
Yeah, he does. He gets the old mind rape going for him.
Whenever Pike gets shot. It's like, what is death like?
Yeah.
You mind if I touch your face?
He's like, well, I can't really move right now, but okay. Ooh, this is what it's like to be in a Vulcan mine.
Kirk. He's like, that's what Uhura looks like naked?
Whoa, your girlfriend's hot.
Talk about some happy final thoughts there.
Pike didn't look very happy, though. He was probably disturbed at the other things Spock does in his free time.
Oh, my God.
Wait, you do what for relaxation?
My blood is pumping out of my chest. This is an unusual sensation. And meanwhile, Kirk is shooting at the...
Kirk is throwing water hoses at Khan's ship.
Yeah, and then he does sort of the, what's his name, Die Hard move, where he takes the water hose and he throws it off, and it gets caught into his...
The intake on the ship.
On the airship.
Which Khan's breaks it.
And Khan's beams out, and apparently beams... to Kronos at this point.
Well, this is another thing that they explain in the book. It's that the beam had all the different waypoints where he was going to go. He actually beamed lots of places before he got to Kronos. But Kronos was the end destination.
That's so conveniently just glossed over. They couldn't have explained that in like 3 seconds.
Like I just did, but no. I mean, it'll slow down the flow of the movie.
Yeah.
But like in the movie, they just... Abrams is just about speed and pacing and in the next movie with Justin Lin directing, he'll be about more speed.
Yeah, he'll be so fast you won't even know what's happening.
Fast beaming.
So the airship goes down. Khan obviously beams out, and Kirk then sees Pike dying on the floor, and Kirk's obviously quite upset because they have this fatherly mentor position or relationship.
Yeah.
And, Spock is mind meld, so he kind of knows what's going on. And I think he wanted to find how he's feeling about it. And because we didn't really explain as much before, but after the whole volcano incident, Uhura kind of made a shit fit about him,
not caring.
Yeah, not caring.
Being a Vulcan.
Yeah,
how dare you be logical instead of actually care and worry about my feelings because I'm a woman.
Yeah.
And you should give a damn.
Yeah.
Cold-hearted Vulcan pointy-eared bastard.
Yeah, I mean Uhura's kind of a racist in this movie. It's like this is who he is.
Yeah.
Theist.
But I mean, like at the same time, she's like, "Oh, you don't care about dying." I'm like, "Oh, he had no agency over his situation. Nothing he could have." I mean, the line broke, the ship had to be scuttled. Like he had no way of escaping
not
the volcano.
Not only that, but first they have both signed up for Starfleet. They know it's not a walk in the park. Secondly, they're in a volcano. What did you expect? And thirdly, he is a Vulcan. So, like, all these things can combine. Why are you being a whiny-ass bitch about this? Just be normal. This is what life is. You've chose this life. You chose this boyfriend. Stop being an asshole.
But on the plus side, whenever they're beamed up, whenever he's beamed up out of the volcano, Chris Doohan is at the helm of the transporter. And later, and he's also at the helm of the transporter. Chris Doohan is, of course, the wonderful Scotty, James Doohan's son, who plays Scotty in Star Trek Continues.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so he's the guy in the transporter room. I don't know if he's in the first movie. I think he was in the transporter room in the first movie, but he's definitely in the transporter room both times and Into Darkness.
Cool.
That is Scotty's son.
Right. Wow. Interesting. Very cool. So going back, so HQ gets blown up. And then here we have the we get a call from
Scotty.
Scotty that he realizes that
they've gone to Kronos.
He's gone to Kronos. He's basically used his formula,
his transwarp formula that Spock gave him.
And here's another huge plot hole. Is like during this, if they have all this information, why don't they just have like the most elite squad transwarp beam to Kronos and take out Khan?
Which is really interesting, because in the Star Trek Khan comic books, Admiral Marcus has like the personal beaming things, and he gives them to Khan. Actually, no, I think Khan actually develops the small beaming thing based on Scotty's equation, and he beams to Praxis and blows Praxis up before the events of Star Trek Into Darkness.
How does that make sense?
Because it was a Section 31 mission.
Because Praxis doesn't blow up until Star Trek VI.
But in Star Trek VI, it blows up because of
overmining
and poor maintenance. Mm-hmm. In Star Trek Khan, which takes place before Into Darkness, it is a Section 31 covert objective to destroy it. And it's all because of Scotty's transbeaming equation and Khan making a small transbeaming device so it could beam to Praxis. So Khan goes and kicks butt in Praxis. And just so we can kind of answer the why is Khan white, Khan was born Indian. He was born and he had his leg cut off. It's less eugenics and more like genetic engineering, because when they genetic engineer him, they make him better and it regrows his leg. So I guess they put some chameleon blood or something in there some lizard blood in there to let his limb grow back, and then he's better and smarter, and they basically make a whole bunch of them, and then they're basically run out of the world because of they're targeted with a genetic.
So this is all disease. Like in
that makes less sense than the first time around at this game.
Yeah, I mean, what this is the comic or is this the book?
This is the comic book for Khan. So oh Khan,
so convoluted.
So a Miranda-class ship finds the Botany Bay, and they bring it back to the shipyard where the Vengeance is being built. The Vengeance is mostly built at this time.
I have issues with this too, but we'll get into that later.
Well, I mean, it makes sense that the Vengeance wasn't built in a year. So the Vengeance is mostly built by the time. So Marcus figures out who Khan is, and then he changes his race, he changes his face, he changes his voice, so that when he wipes his memory, as much of it as he can, for being a superhuman. It regenerates because he is superhuman, and he's got that regeneration power because his leg grew back, right? So
that doesn't mean that you can regrow memory in Grams.
Oh my God, this is such bullshit. I'm sorry. Look, this is my thing. The original Khan was engineerically was engineered through
eugenics,
say picking out the best of the best of the best of certain DNA strands that make people, you know, good at something.
Well, he was genetically engineered. I mean, I think they could sort of, even in the Prime universe, talk about, I don't think it's regular eugenics. I think it's genetic engineering, because Bashir was genetically engineered, which was outlawed because of Khan.
You don't, like, inject somebody with genetic, and it's not Captain America. It's basically the idea of, like, if you ever see the movie Gattaca, where people are
genetic,
like,
manipulation.
Yeah, they're
selectively bred. I mean, I understand what eugenics normally means, but even in Star Trek, they kind of contradict themselves a little bit with the augments. I mean, they're just enhanced via genetic manipulation.
I just assume those augments are people that are born with enhanced genetic breeding. I mean, the selective breeding.
Well, you could stimulate that growth afterwards as well with different, you know, plausible ideas through Star Trek, but still.
In the comics, Khan was a street rat. He was just some kid on the street. He wasn't.
Okay, so they just
yeah, anyway. Doesn't make any sense.
They just totally bullshit that whole thing.
So, he changes his face so that when he looks in the mirror, he won't recognize himself, and he gives him this whole backstory, and so.
All right.
This is how we get Benedict Cumberbatch as Khan.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's to me is still BS, but I'll let it ride just because it's so BS. Anyways,
we have too many other targets. That one's too easy.
Back to the movie.
I bought these comics to explain this to you specifically for this episode, guys.
It's not working for me. I'm sorry, and I'm a big comic fan.
My brain hurts.
Yeah, that doesn't work for me. So he's beamed out. He's gone to Kronos. Kirk goes to Admiral Marcus, says, "Give me the Enterprise." Somehow he thinks he's the only one that can go after him. I don't know why.
When, since in the comic, you know, he's got this device where he can send a Section 31 agent after him, and that would make a lot more sense.
But. Or like 20 or 50 and have them all hunt him down like a crack squad of commandos.
But no, Marcus wants a war with the Klingons, so he's going to send the Enterprise because he's like, oh, Kirk's a dumbass, so we'll just... And a hothead, so we'll just send him in.
Well, he already blew up Kronos.
He'll screw something else. Praxis.
Oh, yeah, he blew up Praxis. Anyway, so...
they find out he's in the Ketha province of Kronos. It hasn't been inhabited in 20-something years. Although, a nice side note is General Martok was born in the Ketha lowlands.
Oh, nice.
So apparently, it was settled sometime after the original series.
I had the kind of feeling that this was like the Chernobyl area of Kronos. Like, maybe they had like a huge nuclear explosion.
Well, maybe it was in the area where...
It's the after effects of a brawl. Well,
Too much headbutting.
Maybe it was...
Right?
Maybe it's the area where Praxis blew up into Kronos. But they said it's been uninhabited for decades, and that only happened a year ago.
I am not paying attention to the Praxis bullshit, okay? That comic stuff.
No, it's blown up in the movie. Whenever you see the movie, their moon, it's in chunks whenever they go to Kronos. So it's not bullshit, because it's in the comic, and it reinforces
what part of the movie?
Whenever they go to Kronos, that you see Praxis, it's blown up, and they fly past it when they go to Kronos.
I did not see that at all.
I didn't see it either.
It's there.
All right.
Damn it.
I think you just made it up. Anyways, they get these torpedoes that can't be traced that are going to basically – he's supposed to sit on the Klingon border and just fire these into Kronos, and it's going to blow them up. And there's 72 of them, and they don't know anything about it. They're supposed to be top secret.
Scotty resigns.
Scotty wants to quit.
Because they won't tell him what is in the missiles.
Right.
And they don't even know, probably.
Right.
Probably.
No, I don't think anybody knows, other than maybe Marcus and maybe a select few other people. So Scotty resigns. He's not on the ship any longer. He makes Chekhov chief engineer. I mean, there's nobody underneath. Like, the next level of engineer is underneath Scotty.
Scotty has no other chiefs.
There's nobody else that was even slight.
Just because he did well wearing all the hats in the first movie doesn't mean we do this a second time.
Right. And then, so they go to, they go into warp, they take off, and they're, in the meantime, Spock has been giving him shit about the torpedoes. That this is not morally right, that the Federation wouldn't just execute someone. He should go to trial because this is against morally reprehensible. More than one person has brought this up to Kirk, and Kirk knows it too. I mean, Kirk's pissed off about Pike. He wants revenge, but still he does want, he does know that Spock's right, that he can't just go and just execute him. So... The Enterprise falls out of warp. There's some damage to the warp core. Chekhov blames himself.
This is what really, really bothers me. They're in warp for like 2 seconds. They fall out of warp, and they're basically exactly where they need to be.
Right. Well, I think they expected. I think Marcus wanted him to be like stranded there after he shoots the missiles and the Klingons come after him and blow him up.
But there's issues with like the time because an Enterprise takes about four days to get to Kronos at warp 4.5, mm-hmm. and I know we've got up to warp 9 in this TOS era, but still like. Still, it wouldn't take hours, even at even a high warp, to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get back because Scotty references he's only been gone from the ship a day. Whenever they're running to the ship at the end of the film, so right. He's only been gone for a day. So they get to and from Kronos in like minutes,
right?
When it should take like hours.
Well, again, J.J. Abrams likes to speed things up.
Yes, I know.
They take Harry Mudd's spaceship, apparently.
Yeah, Harry Mudd, this is from the comic. This is from the Before Darkness comic, the four comics that came out the 4 months before the film. It's actually Harry Mudd's daughter's ship, and Harry Mudd's daughter is half Bajoran.
Okay.
So lots of little trivia, guys, because I've read the comics. So you don't have to.
Apparently, this movie makes far less sense when you read the comics. No, the Harry Mudd thing probably made sense, but anyway.
Well, Harry Mudd's daughter was delivering arms to a planet that Robert April was on because half the race was like allied with the Klingons, and he was allied with half the race, and they were fighting over the planet. And she was delivering arms to Robert April,
mm-hmm.
who was in violation of the Prime Directive.
Who hasn't at this point?
Yeah, right. It's like everybody.
Your mother.
It's like the thing now. Have you done it yet? No, dude. What are you waiting for? You gotta do it.
Gotta try breaking the Prime Directive.
Prime Directive, man.
Man,
if he doesn't turn like three shades of red when you do it, you gotta go do it again.
It's
like, no better high.
Are you a square?
breaking that Prime Directive.
You were some kind of square.
You were following the rules.
You a Herbert?
There's nothing more prime than that directive, baby.
It wasn't one of those hippies at college, buddy Herberts or something. I can't remember.
I don't know.
Anyway, so they take Harry Mudd's ship. They go to Kronos.
They disguise themselves as Cormian arms dealers, which I guess that's what the arms that she was distributing.
And apparently the Klingons do...
monitor this abandoned area.
It's like, hey, who's that?
They've got a very interesting superstructure. I mean, it almost looks like they're flying around on Coruscant without the traffic.
I know. It's pretty intense. And so they have this whole chase scene. And unfortunately,
and they try to be the Millennium Falcon. They go sideways in between some
it's different things.
Not fit. Yes, it will.
Yes, it will. Kirk's like, I'll make it fit because I do this all the time with the ladies.
Just because you have practice doesn't mean it works.
Yeah, I'll make it fit. So he does jam it in there, and
the clock isn't sure it qualifies.
I don't.
It does not qualify.
And but unfortunately, on the other end, they do get caught. They're surrounded by the Klingons.
Because they went over, not through.
Yeah, they're just like, I'll just fly over. What's the point? And this is where Uhura's time to shine.
She gets to speak Klingon, and she speaks Klingon awesome. Like I like this part in the movie because you get to see a Klingon finally, and you get to hear some Klingon talk. So they were nerdy enough to go and do the whole Klingon language and not just have them speak English and have you understand it. But they weren't nerdy enough to spell the planet correctly.
Right.
Because they spell it Kronos.
Without the Q, right?
Well, and Kronos is spelled Q-O-apostrophe-N-O-S, I believe, is the correct spelling of it.
Here's my issue with this movie over and over again. I think they expect everyone to be a dumbass. I think they're just they just can't figure this out. We have to do it. We have to hold their hand as much as possible.
But we're not going to explain it to them. But we're going to hold their hand and pat them all the way through it.
Right.
I'm just like, why did you spell Kronos wrong? But then you go and have people speaking Klingon and not just, have them speak English.
And here's the thing with Uhura the whole time. Is like Uhura has this great scene where she confronts the Klingons trying to, obviously speak to them in language. It's cool. It's got some cool parts to it.
But they make her a victim.
Not just a victim, but before that, she's like bitching out Spock. On the thing,
and they're in the middle of a tense situation.
Don't get me involved.
She's like, I want to talk about feelings. She's like, I want to talk about feelings.
And it's like, and people like are always talking about like when they see this movie is like they like the this like argument between Spock and Uhura, and I just think it's literally insulting.
It was only there to help people justify the issues in their current relationships instead of justify anything that has to do with the Star Trek universe at all.
And for women going with their boyfriends who don't like Star Trek.
Yeah, it's like, I just don't understand.
Well, that's yeah. I just don't understand why he doesn't listen. He just doesn't want to watch these with me. I don't get it.
Yeah, exactly. And then, yeah. No.
It's got starships blowing up and there's explosions and there's really cool stuff and he won't watch it.
Yeah. I don't. It's literally one of those things. I just see it and it's like, it just seems so contrived. And it's like, why did you put that in there? Why does Uhura, who has... You know, obviously she could speak languages. She's obviously supposed to be a very smart person.
And she's supposed to be a very strong woman, and then...
And then she's fighting with Spock because he doesn't show feelings. It's like, what the fuck you...
What did you expect?
Well, you're dating a Vulcan. At the same time, it's something that Spock's been dealing with, where he's been trying to balance his emotions and still be, you know, embrace his Vulcan side at the same time. So I can see her having this issue with him.
You can't change a man. You can't change a man.
No, but you can damn sure support him to be the person he wants to be once he figures out who that is.
Mama's boy. Oh, wait, no, his mom died. Sorry.
Anyways.
Ouch.
Winona Ryder. She was shoplifting.
That was a waste. That was a total waste of Winona Ryder.
She was totally shoplifting in the Vulcan Science Academy. Like, ooh, I'll take this and I'll take that.
Oh, that's shiny.
You know, clap those on Vulcans, and no one will think twice of it, probably, because they'll just replicate another one. We keep the technology from the humans.
So here they are. Uhura's getting choked out by the Klingons, and then...
Khan saves the day.
Khan turns out to be freaking...
the Incredible Hulk!
Superman, the Incredible Hulk. He's the whole Avengers packed into one body.
He's the scrawny guy that can dual wield.
No, but the thing is that one weapon he's dual wielding is a weapon he broke off one of the other Klingon ships because it's just a giant. Because he shoots down other ships with that because it's a ship to ship weapon that he's like somehow able to manipulate with his hand.
It just looks like a giant autocannon,
and that still doesn't make sense because where does he get the power source? If you just rip something off a ship, doesn't mean it's going to work for you. I mean, give me a
Khan's got
just
super.
Just remove the turret.
He bled on it a little bit.
Yeah,
he just cut up, and
his platelets get on it.
Yeah,
paper cuts are good.
And this is another issue I have. It's like, okay, he's strong as five men. Doesn't make him Superman. There's a difference.
No, but they literally said he was a Superman. And you didn't really see his strength before he gets beat by Kirk in space seed. He says I'm five times stronger than a regular human.
Right, but he's five times stronger as a human, but it doesn't make him a damn Superman that he can like. I mean, he's literally doing a Michael Jackson dance up on that hill, shooting all the Klingon ships, and
he's a badass with style.
He's like,
don't be jealous.
It's white.
I shoot it the same.
Yeah,
ice baby.
What?
Oh, God.
How do we get into Vanilla Ice?
Wow. And we took a major step to the left.
Oh, man. That got worse.
Step back to the right.
That's the only thing I can think of. Sorry.
Whoa. Anyways. I have an issue. They just make him into this, like, super Superman. It's like, yes, he's supposed to be, like, really, really amazing, but not that amazing that he can take out, what, 30, 50
Klingons and, like, three D3s. Although, I'm worried, why did they call the Bird of Prey a D3? The D is the designation of their larger battle cruisers.
I have no idea.
I thought it was just because it was an older model.
Probably.
Well, no, but I mean the battle cruisers, the bigger ones, like the
probably
the ones
because J.J. Abrams just
doesn't
give a shit.
Doesn't know what the difference is between the Bird of Prey and the D series.
Just doesn't care. They send a message to Khan saying that they have these torpedoes aimed at him that he has to surrender.
That was Sulu's best line. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Sulu's.
Like, I mean, that was
only good line in the thing.
Best and only line in this movie.
In the movie, pretty much.
And
yeah.
It was like, remind me to never play poker or mess with you.
Never to piss you off.
Piss you off. Thank you.
Oh, and can I just put out just here, just before all this happened, obviously McCoy is on the thing, and they're giving him all the McCoy standard lines. Says, you don't have a bank robbery.
Well, the getaway car's got a
flat tire, and stuff like that. It's like, are you
just set him up for high stakes poker game and told him to bluff.
I know. It's like, it's just like, stop. This is just, it's still, it's like.
The metaphors like were good, but they were way too close together.
Yeah, not just that, but just why are we doing this with McCoy? I mean, just like, it seems so silly. Like, we pigeonhole McCoy as just a guy who throws out these things, you know, like these little metaphors. And
he's a better character than that. Don't insult him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, so Khan takes out all the Klingons. Kirk and crew barely does anything. And Kirk gets his ass kicked, actually, more than anything. Gets kicked his ass kicked by a bunch of Klingons.
But at least he doesn't get Batleths.
We don't see any Batleths, actually.
There's four or five Klingons with Batleths. You need to watch that scene again.
I didn't see a Batleth. I saw the smaller the daggers.
They've got Batleths. There's like three or four Klingons with
Maybe
Batleths.
Maybe they are. I didn't see them. I wasn't really.
You don't get a good look at them, and they're a slightly different design than regular Batleths, but they're still full size Batleths.
I guess I was just cringing with the Khan, moonwalk dance at the top.
You're still trying to get over that. You're blinded.
I was just like, little smooth criminal going on there.
Okay, I thought of something that wasn't. Sorry.
Yeah, you got one Michael Jackson song.
There you go.
Then he realizes that these are the same torpedoes, the 72 torpedoes. Like, how many torpedoes do you have? Or however Cumberbatch talks. he's like, you can arrest me, you know. And then Kirk ends up just
wailing on him to no avail.
Yeah, Khan just looks at him like, what are you doing?
It's like, this doesn't.
You keep bringing your hand on my face? Okay.
Yeah,
that tickles. It would have been better if he giggled a little bit. It's like, you're tickling
just
me.
A little, you
you're
missed.
Tickling me.
Aren't you sweet?
Look at you.
Oh, he's saying he likes me.
Yeah. And then Uhura yells, Captain. He's like, Captain.
Captain? You're a pussy.
I know who's on top now.
Yeah.
They take him to the brig.
They're
going there.
And
they get McCoy to draw some blood.
Yeah.
And this is another part where Chris Pine does some really good acting. Because his face is all puffed up. His neck is all big. Like, he doesn't look like he normally looks. I wonder if he had to redo the scene like 100 times. He was just so pissed that he had to keep doing the
Maybe
scene.
Maybe he had him lift some weights.
I don't know. Like,
he's... You know, he doesn't want to engage with Khan because he thinks Khan's going to do something, play some Jedi mind trick with him.
Khan dares him to open up a torpedo, and then we get to see Carol Marcus in her underwear.
Oh, yeah, Carol Marcus Yay. In her underwear.
So that's like the second best scene in the other than the crossover at the beginning, and then we get the second best scene.
This is what Dave's are happy about. Yeah, and that had nothing to do. Why was she getting undressed in there?
Well, I don't understand. They walk to the shuttlecraft, and then she puts.
It was to make up for all the other mistakes they made throughout the movie. It's like
here's some eye candy. But I mean, like in the future, like aren't people like supposed to be like more like liberal, like or just like more chill about things?
I don't know.
I mean, I think.
So they're European.
I think it would have been better if she would have just undressed in front of him and started changing instead of having him turn around, because then you get this kind of weird
perv. But why is she undressing?
You get this weird pervy thing, I guess, to put on the full body suit instead of the skirt.
I guess. But anyways, they take the torpedo down to this planetoid that just happens to be nearby, and they try to get into it. Obviously, there's some shenanigans where McCoy almost blows everything up. And she saves
him. And then she turns out she can disarm the thing by herself without any help.
Yeah, she just rips everything out and just how everything works. I'm assuming she knows something what's going on. She seems like she's competent on that. But here they find out that there's a man in the torpedo.
There's a popsicle man.
Yeah.
He's a frozen.
And then Kirk goes running back to the brig. Why is there a man in the torpedo?
Why wouldn't there be a man in that torpedo?
I put a man in all my torpedoes.
If you know what I mean.
I like them frozen.
I like them a little frozen.
And it feels better it cools, when they're cold, I don't know.
It cools things off at the end of a long, hot day.
Here's the thing is I don't get. There's a couple things. Like, why didn't Khan just wake up the rest of his crew?
Khan didn't have access to them. And the comics, Admiral Marcus.
But he said he put each of those guys into the torpedoes.
He did. He hacked Admiral Marcus's computer. Admiral Marcus wouldn't give him access to the people, so he hacked Admiral Marcus's email and told them to put the people into the torpedo. So
there seems to be a lot of backstory that's got to be told by this just to make this movie fucking make sense.
Yes.
It's making less sense as we go.
So, like, if you, when there's a question, I'll fill in the gap that happened.
I'm just getting more and more frustrated. These explanations are more ridiculous. I think someone watched this movie and goes, like, okay, there's a shitload of plot holes. Let's try to figure them out. How can we make this make somewhat sense?
So they tried really hard. I mean, the comic, it was okay. I mean, it wasn't like crazy. I mean, they answered questions. Whether or not the questions were answered well is up to your interpretation, I suppose.
So, So they got the they basically find out that this is, you know, he's got all these his crew members, and Khan gives this little speech like, "There's nothing I wouldn't do for my crew," you know.
And he manipulated me. I couldn't do anything with them.
Right. Apparently, because he wiped his memory. So
yes.
He
didn't know for a while.
Yeah. So he has such a strong relationship with his crew, with his wiped memory.
Well, I mean, it all grew back. He remembered who he was and all
the things. In the end, it all worked
out
for him.
And all the things he did.
That still makes no goddamn sense. Anyways.
Well, Marcus.
I've given up on trying to make sense of
this. This doesn't make sense.
Admiral Marcus. Oh, you know what makes even less sense? Admiral Marcus is working with a female Sulu. So I don't know if that's Sulu's girlfriend or mother or sister or fiance or I don't know. Like, but he's working with a female Sulu. They never really explain what she's doing in the comic. She's just part of Section 31, and he keeps calling her Sulu. I'm like, oh.
Right.
Is that his wife? That's an interesting relationship. I was like, yeah, what'd you do, honey? Oh, I just pruned some. There you go. Prune some flowers, and oh, I know it was really unfreezing popsicle men.
So,
I'm giving them a ride.
In the meantime, he gives Kirk some coordinates to check out, which are close to Jupiter. And he says, check out these coordinates, and I think you'll figure out what's going on. And he calls up Scotty
in the bar.
He's completely drunk.
Drunk in the bar, and.
People complain about this part, too, that the communicator, oh, how did this communicator go all the way to Earth? And I'm like, every time we've ever seen the communication in Star Trek, they're always tied to the ship's computer.
I don't have a problem with that, but here's my issue, is that this is obviously, Admiral Marcus is, like, watching Enterprise. It's got to be monitoring everything. How do they not monitor his communication with Scotty? That would be, like, I'd just be just 101. Section 31.
Maybe nobody wants to listen to the pissed off drunk Scotsman.
Who has an imaginary friend he keeps talking to.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that guy's like imaginary because he's just like.
If he is imaginary, that would be awesome. I think it would
be really funny.
That's not possible because Kirk actually picks him up in the first one.
Maybe.
It's not possible.
Picks him up?
Yeah, he picks him up and moves him off the bulkhead.
Yeah, I think you're right. I can't quite remember, but I do.
Maybe Scotty just think Kirk did that.
Yeah,
that'd be. And like you know, he
was just moving a box off the bulkhead.
Yeah, and then you know also he hands Kirk his resignation too when he's like, come on, but maybe he just thinks.
I really like this theory.
Because he never answers back, and he's sitting there in the bar. And he's like, come on. He's like sitting there arguing with him. He's arguing with him, but he's arguing with himself.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that creature is.
This would be great if this is the case.
I think this would be really awesome if Scotty is just that crazy.
Right. I would love that. That would.
It would solve a lot of problems in the past.
It would just like. And then
many things.
Maybe in the next movie they'll do like the Den of Wolves thing where he's like mistaken for killing women and it's like, no, it was him! It was him!
He did it the whole time! He's a homicidal maniac!
Wolf in the Fold. That's the name of the episode. Wouldn't that be awesome if it's like, you know, he's like, no, it was him. It was him.
He did
and
it.
Everyone's just like looking at like nobody knows what Scotty's talking about.
Who the hell are you talking about? So Scotty goes and checks this out. This is another plot hole I don't get. Scotty just takes a shuttle and flies it right to this top secret facility. They don't seem to matter if he flies up to it. And then when the repair crew is coming to work on he just goes right in. They don't. This is like
I read on Memory Alpha.
Sensory alarms or anything like that.
Was it? There's a deleted scene.
I think there was a deleted scene, or maybe they just didn't film it.
A lot of excuses for this movie.
Where Scotty like has to get on board the Vengeance. Also, Michael Dorn was originally contacted to be a, I think, a Klingon, and then they said, "Oh, we don't want to mix the old with the new." That's how you started this thing. You brought in Leonard Nimoy. Why didn't you bring in Michael Dorn?
That would have been cool. Throw him a bone.
Yeah, like make him a Klingon. That would have been so awesome.
So, So Scotty finds the dreadnought class, the USS Vengeance, that is sitting just behind Saturn.
But if it's the first of its kind, it should be the USS Dreadnought.
No, we can't keep chasing.
Well,
these
here's the other side of it, is a plot hole for me. Is like, how do they? This is like Star Trek universe. How do they just hide this giant facility that's building this giant ship, and nobody's like,
I don't know where the ship came from. It's bigger than anything we've ever seen before, and nobody's
nobody ever visits Jupiter. Nobody likes to go near Jupiter.
Station is like it's got like the worst food. Nobody goes.
So nobody just even tries.
There's just a Roy Rogers there that has the worst burgers.
But
what did I do wrong?
But everyone on Section 31 knows the secret menu, so they get good food. Nobody else knows the secret menu because it's the Section 31 menu.
There's an old closed down White Castle.
Sulu always goes to White Castle, right?
Shut down, but
the whole thing went down after the Krispy Kreme moved out. So, anyways, So Scotty basically discovers as he sneaks on the USS Vengeance somehow. That is not really fully explained. I still find this all highly strange that this could actually even be the case. That how he could even get on. It's basically, I mean, I know Scotty's supposed to be an engineer and he's supposed to be brilliant, but it's basically sneaking into like the Pentagon or something similar to that. And then just like sneaking onto like, some like, nuclear submarine without them finding out about it. I find it very hard to believe.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. But anyway, he goes and he sabotages it a la Star Trek III. So we get a little bit of Star Trek III action going on in here. So Admiral Marcus comes up and visits the Enterprise all stranded on the edge of the neutral zone. Kirk lies about Khan's location, and then tells him we'll help you out. And then he just warps away and he's like, oh, this is going to be cool. And then all of a sudden, Carol Marcus knows,
They can catch up with warp. Which I kind of remember people catching up with the old Enterprise, Archer's Enterprise, in the episodes. I can't quite remember if that was a case or not, but if, when in warp, they would get in fights and they'd be like shooting at each other in warp.
Yeah, I think you're right about that.
So, yeah, I definitely think warp fighting in warp is a thing. I think in Next Generation they fought at warp too. They just didn't like change the graphics or anything.
But my point only being is that they're like, that can't be possible. They can't catch up with us. And yet they do, and they're fighting. They start firing at it. So,
like they said, it's like the concept, it's like twice as big and three times the speed, but I'm like they never say how fast the Enterprise can go.
It doesn't even matter to me. It's like they say it's impossible for them to do that, and then they do it, and it's already been done before. So there again is another just writing flaw of like continuity and canon. Like this has happened before in Enterprise, where they've gotten the original Enterprise is the old version, so it's not as good as this Enterprise.
Yeah,
And this is before the JJ verse kicks in, so that Enterprise still does exist.
It could be that this one's more equipped for science and exploration than actual weaponry as well.
True, but that they were almost acting like that is not possible. That they can't do.
Yeah, Sulu's like, I don't understand this reading, and then they get shot at in warp, and this is one scene I sort of kind of like. I kind of like how warp is like a conduit. And then they got like pushed out of it.
Right.
But then I don't like the fact that, you know, they were trying to go back to Earth anyway.
And they're just outside
then,
the moon.
And then they just get pushed outside. Wouldn't they have been trying to drop out of warp at that point anyway? I don't understand.
Yeah, they're literally like at the moon.
There's huge logic gaps in this movie as far as like how warp works.
Right.
Because it's just like mere seconds they're in warp and they get shot out of the sky and then they're all the way back at Earth at the same, and then they're getting blown away. And there was a space station right there with a whole bunch of other ships. No one comes to check out, see what's going on.
Why is that ship blowing up the Enterprise?
Yeah, what's this big unidentified ship?
Wait, the Enterprise saved us a couple times, didn't they? Just let them
and
go.
They're at Earth, and they don't call.
Yeah, they got it.
They don't call Starfleet and like, hey, look,
that Kirk guy's crazy.
They don't like turn their telescopes or anything to look at this. It's just like there are.
It's just Kirk. Don't worry about it.
There's so much like I don't understand. They're at the heart of the Federation, nobody is around. How is nobody around? And they don't even try to call anybody except for Spock at New Vulcan. I'm like, why are you making a long distance call when you can call local right to Earth?
Long distance charges may apply.
But it's just like, I mean, like it was just a shoehorn old Spock into it and get some, you know, information on Khan. But
as
I'm like,
you know, I promise not to share anything that could change your destiny.
But I'm going to this time.
But that being said, Khan's a crazy bastard.
And you should probably kill him.
Yeah. How did you defeat him?
And now, you have a chance.
How did you defeat him?
Well, there's this thing called the Genesis device, which hasn't been invented yet. And
Sarah Marker's going to make it. Really?
Really? Unless she's not in the next movie, which is I don't see her on the list.
I don't see her on the list either, which I kind of sucks, because I think she'd be a nice addition to the crew.
Yeah, because, I mean, they at the end of this movie, they say, oh, welcome to the family, and then if she's not in the next one, it's going to suck.
Right.
I'm sure, hopefully,
well, no,
they'll at least
that
explain
would make
it in
sense
passing.
If they left her in it.
It'd be awesome if she hobbled still when she walked.
I hope their medicine's better than that.
my leg.
With all the plow holes and crap that we're dealing with, she'll probably still
My leg still hurts when it starts to rain.
There's a storm coming.
Kirk, there's a storm coming. My leg is hurting me fiercely. I had to take some aspirin.
And Kirk's like, yes, I know, I'm that storm, and I was holding your leg at a weird position. Maybe that's why it hurts, because he's got to make David. He's got to
right.
do it.
David, just yeah, that's right.
All right, got to get the baby making.
Get that baby.
But there's no romance at all between Kirk. It's just that weird, pervy look, which I think is just weird to have in there.
This is, again, where like you have to kind of think about it. It's all the characters, all the ingredients of making your cake, but now you're just mixing them up randomly, and it's not going to make a cake if you don't do a certain sequence of how to make how you're baking it. So
you bake the eggs and then you put in the batter.
Yeah, and then you
on
put
top
the
of the
flour,
baked eggs.
And you put the flour on top of everything after it's been in the oven.
And then you mix the frosting with the flour.
Yeah, and you throw the sugar over your shoulder. So
for good luck.
That's an important way to do it.
And then you yell out Mazel Tov. So
thanks for breaking our equipment, Aaron, just hitting the table.
I know. So but yeah. But yeah, so we have all the ingredients, but it's not going to all make sense anymore because it's all so much different. So we're not going to get the same product.
But speaking of the wonderful Carol Marcus, she runs up to the bridge because she's the only one that can stop it from being destroyed. And she's like, Daddy, I have an emotional speech to make.
I thought you were better than this, Dad. Which I think this is a good way, but then
when you spanked me 100 times when I stole something, I didn't think you'd be that. I didn't think you'd be this cruel to kill a whole bunch.
I would
like,
not want Admiral Marcus as a dad. He seems like he would be awful.
Yeah, that explains why she turned out the way she did.
I am Robo Dad.
Yeah, exactly.
I will spank you with my gun.
And honestly, using transporter to mute somebody is just.
But their shields were up, and then later they reference they can't beam with the shields up.
Oh, the beaming thing is all over the place.
They beam her out when the shields are up, but then later they say they can't beam because the shields are up.
They don't seem
to forget that your shields are up.
They don't seem to have this beaming thing figured out. I don't know what's going on.
Somebody just forgetting to take the safety off is what I think is happening.
Yeah.
That nice blue button on your console, yeah, you're supposed to press that.
Actually, it might be Scotty's son. Maybe he's not that good at us.
Oh, that's not continuity. That's just
entirely.
That's just nice trivia.
So, Captain, I didn't teach my son shit.
I was too busy fixing the Enterprise.
I was fixing the Enterprise, getting drunk when I was home. I was a terrible father.
I kept talking to my little green friend who no one ever saw.
I thought I was teaching him.
My son was always so confused. He's like, he figured out I wasn't talking to him after the first year or two.
My dad's an asshole.
He picked up this other guy instead of me.
Right.
What the hell, man?
He's just picking up these imaginary children. All right, so anyways, going back, Enterprise got pretty shot up. Carol Marcus
gets beamed away
because
after the longest line she has in the movie,
and no, she has more lines than that, but
it's the longest single. Oh no, maybe the getting naked scene is
and the torpedo sequence so she has
a couple of these.
No, she has some good lines. So she's on board, and they basically. This is where Scotty's
sabotaging the ship.
Yeah, he sabotaged the ship. The ship all of a sudden can't blow him up, and Scotty calls over. He's like, "It was me, Captain. Hold alone." And
I found the ship.
And
so Kirk and Khan go into the garbage chute with some fancy space suits and some nice digital displays.
I actually don't have a huge problem with this. I think this is actually clever and fun writing, and it doesn't make a lot of sense. But
except for that, it's the exact same thing for the first movie.
Yeah, I know. But this
is—he even references that it's the exact same thing for the first
movie. I know. But this is that was like a free fall. This is just like.
But he references it.
It's launched in space.
Yeah. And I just like they're
going, pretending to be a torpedo.
Yeah,
that's like jumping off a bridge into a shot glass that's in another smaller shot glass.
Right. Well, thank God they have Khan, the superior intellect, to get them through. So Khan saves Kirk's ass through the debris field, and Scotty opens the door at the last second, and they get into
Scotty.
Thanks, Scotty. You saved our ass.
You bloody bastard!
They make their way onto the onto the bridge. In the meantime, Spock decides he's going to take out all the cryotubes and leave the torpedoes in their bays. So they remove all the cryotubes and they move it into sick bay. Khan gets and Kirk get aboard the get on the bridge, and they basically. Scotty shoots Khan and stuns him almost immediately.
But I think he opens his eye a little bit, because we see later Khan can take like 30 stuns and doesn't really bother
him. Yes, it doesn't.
I think he opens his eye a little bit whenever
it
happens.
Again, this drives me berserk.
He's like waiting for something to happen. So
you're her shooting him so many times, he's like, that doesn't do it.
Oh. So then Kirk is all
you
like,
"You shoot me, it tickles me."
I like it.
Do it again.
Yeah. He's like, "I don't want to stun you and drag your ass out of the chair in front of your daughter." And so Khan takes this like family moment to get up and like knock Scotty out. He punches Kirk a whole bunch of times. He breaks
Carol's leg
with just walking all over it. And then he gives Admiral Marcus a fun lobotomy.
Yes, he squeezes his head. And he goes, "You should have let me slept. I was tired.
I'm cranky.
300 years of sleep wasn't enough."
Which is funny because in Space Heat, he was 200 years, and this is 300 years. I noticed that disparity.
Well, I think they did the math wrong because it's the 23rd century, but it's really just 2200. You know,
cause but this is earlier than before, because this is even before his 5-year mission.
Well, yeah, but. Still.
It does make sense. Anyways.
Reasons.
Oh, God.
70s. Then the 90s. And then
we just established that men from the 90s are not to be trusted.
Yes, don't trust anyone from the 90s, guys.
Anyways.
Now that I was born in the 80s.
Me too. Woo. And Aaron was born before that.
Damn, that's that one.
I was born in the 50s.
he likes whooping at his cane.
We're not talking about what you guys do after the show.
That's right. That's not for you to know.
But it's for Faith to tell, apparently.
Hey, I plan on making some money off of this at some point. So, I mean, we have to fund this show somehow.
She's going to write her tell-all book, which all five people will pick up.
Hey, it'll help.
Go straight to Amazon.
Published for free.
Oh, yeah, I knew on Amazon is the Taken by the Tetris Block, an erotic novel about a woman in a Tetris Block.
Anyways, so Khan basically takes out the whole Vengeance crew and Kirk. He tells Spock that he's going to destroy his ship if he doesn't get the torpedoes. The torpedoes are beamed over, and obviously they detonate the torpedoes on the dreadnought,
knocking out its weapons, saving the Enterprise from taking any more shots. But apparently, if you're near the moon, you're close enough to get sucked into Earth's gravity.
Pretty quickly, too.
Immediately.
You're, like, just being sucked in, like down a drain.
Like, what about satellites that are in orbit and stuff like that? I don't get that, but...
Yeah, they're just falling in.
Enterprise falls.
They're falling.
Spock tells people to evacuate, and they get space seat belts, which you never even saw until Nemesis.
We didn't... No, I thought we saw it with his father. Oh, no, you're talking Nemesis. You're talking the old one.
Before the reboot, yeah.
Yeah.
And then...
Yeah, safety restraints weren't much of a thing.
Nobody wants to evacuate. No, sir, we're not going anywhere. Bullshit.
Oh. You're just waiting to run like hell.
Anyway, Kirk and
Scotty... Because I just pooped my pants, and I don't want to get out of this chair right now. It's really
Thank God I'm wearing my
Kirk
brown
and Spotty
pants.
Hang out.
My brown pants are on. Thank God. I just shit my pants.
No.
Where are the red shirts? I need my brown pants.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm,
Brown. Anyway, Kirk and Scotty go hang out in the brewery, which is on its side for some reason.
The corn silos.
No, it's the brewery. It's on its side for some reason, and somehow Chekhov is able to hold the weight. The 16-year-old Chekhov is able to hold the weight of Kirk and Scotty. When Scotty couldn't even hold his own weight.
He has wonderful muscles.
She has wonderful muscles. And the brewery turns right side up, which allows them to do their prospective jobs. Chekhov runs through something where he takes off a thing and he flips the switch on the thing.
And he did it.
Good
job, Chekhov.
And he grunted a little bit.
Did it again.
Like, he's having trouble with this lever, but he just held three people, like, by himself.
This lever is too hard, Captain. You did it.
Spotty starts saying lines from Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, about the chamber, and Kirk knocks him out and puts a seatbelt on him.
Yep. I like that he put the seatbelt on him.
It's like he cares. He's a caring captain.
I care.
I punched you, but I will put a seatbelt on you.
It's like, I'm not a complete dick.
So you can't escape from this burning ship whenever. So Kirk goes and he kicks the warp core back into alignment.
Which this looks completely impossible.
Like he's kicking he's kicking down instead of across, which is really weird.
It just looks literally impossible. It'd be like, I mean, I don't know. It's like, this is all giant steel. The whole thing looks cockeyed. I don't know how he's
kicking down on it instead of kicking it over. And anyway, after about 16 kicks, it goes back.
Meanwhile, Kirk is being irradiated and basically going to be fried inside from the inside out. But
he's not blind because he's able to find his way back to the door. To have a heart to heart with Spock, where they can trade lines
horribly in a corner.
And here's my issue. This is really this is where it really pisses me off, because you didn't need to really do this part. I mean, they obviously are stealing from Wrath of Khan. This is not necessary on any aspect of the movie.
Like, up until this point, the movie was pretty good.
I can go with a lot of stuff. And I can I can suspend my disbelief for a long time, but this is where I go, like, why are you referencing Wrath of Khan just because you have a Khan in the movie?
Why are you referencing Wrath of Khan in a space seed movie?
Yes. Not just that. Why? And then, you know, obviously they even have the whole thing where, you know, Spock's up on the chair and he's like, you better get down here.
They start, like, verbatim lines from Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
Yep.
Spock takes off running. And he gets down there, and there's but Kirk. But
the continuity between the movies is Spock can get to engineering super fast in both universes.
Yes, he's run like a Dickens.
He can get there in like 3 seconds flat. I don't know how.
Those long Vulcan legs. Just pump those crazy legs, Spock!
That's what I heard her saying. It's like, that's how you do it.
Pump those legs.
Pump those legs. Like, I'm not used to doing it when I'm not on Punk Fire.
Stroke those fingers. Stroke those fingers. And finger bang. Anyway, so
that's how they warm up.
Yeah, that's right. Oh. He gets down there, and they have the whole kind of ripoff of a beautiful scene from Wrath of Khan. This is, seems hollow and pedantic. I don't really understand why this had to be put in here, because I feel like I'm being insulted
like if you're gonna
patronize.
Yeah, patronize.
That's
definitely
what I feel like.
Like the most patronizing part is when he yells Khan, when Spock yells Khan. Like I can see him yelling just like a regular rage.
I can't even see that.
But like really, it was Admiral Marcus that was the bad guy of the film for most of the film. Like, and just switching to Khan, I'm just like, yeah.
Well, first of all, like, what? Spock is a Vulcan. His whole identity is to be Vulcan. And I know he's struggling with his human side. And I know because...
And his mommy died. He's got rage issues. He screamed in the first movie when he was attacking Kirk.
I get this. But here's my issue.
Uhura's constant complaining isn't helping.
Yes. My girlfriend's a bitch.
Antagonistic relationships create stress in the workplace.
Yes, that's right.
Especially when the relationships are in the workplace.
And
there's no boundaries there. You have to leave something at the door.
And Kirk even references, is it going to be a problem, you two working together?
She's like, no. And he's like, uncertain. That was like a great
unclear.
Response.
Yeah,
unclear. I do not have sufficient data.
That was the best response ever.
That was awesome.
It was like, oh, you poor bastard. I've seen so many guys with that expression.
Yeah.
Oh, you got it stuck in the toaster, didn't you?
Yeah.
I know how that feels.
Direction's unclear.
But still, I just feel like this is like, it's almost like, I mean, I'm just going to go off on this tangent here, but like, let's say, after Nazi Germany exterminates all these Jews, and there's obviously far less Jews in the world because of Nazi Germany and what they've done. You almost want to cling to your traditions even stronger and your identity even stronger, and maybe you have rage issues and maybe there's emotional issues, but wouldn't you be taking more time to actually identify with your Vulcan side than your human side? I don't know. I just do not buy it. I mean, Spock is supposed to be non-emotional, and here we have...
But we've got a different Spock now. I mean, the first reboot where, I mean, he literally gets in a fight as a juvenile with other Vulcans. I mean, he ends up kicking the ass of a Vulcan easily, 4 or 5 years, if not more, older than him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, straight laid him out. So, I mean, clearly we're dealing with a guy that is more human than actual Vulcan, and that this is definitely an issue with him.
He lost his home planet, and he lost his mom.
You don't have to run down the litany list. I understand why he's doing
this.
He's
got a lot more emotional issues.
Yeah, he's got more issues than Prime Spock.
I'm just not buying it, and it seems like it goes against his character. And then him yelling Khan and going after revenge.
Yelling Khan was ridiculous.
I can understand it from a production standpoint, where we already have this beautiful, iconic role of exactly what Spock is meant to be. Now, what if Spock didn't get there the way he got there in the last time? What if he arrives at these points in a different fashion, and what would it look like?
Right, I agree. And that's the same thing we see with Kirk. Kirk doesn't have the discipline that we see Kirk in the original series.
Yeah, which is something Spock, the older Spock, actually ended up pointing out in the first one, was that, you guys, you got some learning to do, but it's worth it.
Right.
It wasn't easy for me either, but this shit seems even worse than mine, but it's worth it.
We'll see how it goes in the next film.
So he goes, he beams down to chase. We can't leave out.
Khan takes the ship and he just scrapes off.
Kirk's shenanigans in the engine room gets the warp core working, and all of a sudden the Enterprise is safe again. Khan ship crashes into San Francisco.
Takes out Alcatraz, destroys like 20 giant buildings.
This is pretty...
Thousands and thousands of people are dead.
Yeah,
How much damage can we do to our own planet in one move?
I know. I mean, we're literally probably talking like somewhere in the...
Tens of thousands.
Tens of thousands. Maybe 100,000 or more. You know, it's like hard to really fathom.
Because they could be residences.
Because they're this is a gigantic ship, and it just literally barrels right into San Francisco, into the city there. So,
Cisco's now a crater. Mostly.
Spock runs after Khan. They have a fist fight. The tribble that Bones was injecting blood into came back alive.
But here's the other thing: is like, why is Khan running from Spock? He literally took out like 30, 50 Klingons on his own.
But that's a pissed off Vulcan. The Klingons are one thing. You know what they're going to do? Ragey smash, smash, rawr. That's it. Vulcan?
I don't know.
That logical bastard's going to do something.
I don't know.
We don't know any of Khan's motivation after he's crashed. He's just running. We don't know any of them. I mean,
I think
he's just strong enough to pick up a cool coat, and that's it.
Assumingly, he's trying to infiltrate Section 31 and mess it up some more. But, I mean, other than that, I mean, like.
I think he's trying to take out for the world. I mean, that's, I think, Khan's ultimate thing. I mean, he wants to take over Earth. That's what I think.
Yeah. If I take it, I'm going to wreck it.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. He's going to.
Typical tantrum from any immature child.
No, he's going to take out. He's going to do some damage. But anyway, so Spock and has this chase scene with Khan. They're jumping on airships and they're having fisticuffs.
They figure out the blood is magic and it can revive dead people.
But you have 72 people that are all somehow. The same type as Khan.
Yes, but we don't. We haven't tested any of the other blood yet. Therefore, we must go after Khan just to make sure that he's not an anomaly.
Okay. All right. So then we have they can't get through to him. So Uhura beams down.
Like Chekhov is like the beaming genius in the first film. He like is able to beam them from.
He can't
in motion
shit.
As they're falling.
As from terminal velocity, but he can't...
With the gravity anomaly.
Yeah, with the gravity, and pulling them at terminal velocity. But he can't, you know, get them off of a garbage scow moving 6 miles an hour.
I can't do it.
Apparently he's gotten dumber between the films.
Or, yeah, maybe he's stressed out because he's being with the warp core. And then Uhura comes down, she basically shoots, like...
16 times, stuns.
I mean, just keeps on trying to stun him, and he just will not go down. And then Spock takes like a metal box and just starts beating.
So instead of a metal pipe, it's a metal box this time that takes Khan down.
We know what takes Khan down.
Khan needs some rods metal. Or some metal things.
Metal objects. Hard metal objects.
Hard metal blunt objects.
Yes. They obviously...
Oh my.
I was waiting for it.
The next scene we have is Kirk waking up, and Bones is there, and Spock's there, and you saved me, and then McCoy makes the observation. Says, me and you
heard it had something to do with it too.
and then we have the outro where basically they.
It's a year later. The Enterprise has been refit. They rebuilt all the broken buildings that Khan's vengeance destroyed.
And they're going on their first 5-year mission.
And Khan is put back into the popsicle booth.
Yep. And again, like Indiana Jones, they put them in with the Ark of the Covenant, and they just kind of put them in a warehouse and hope that nobody ever finds them.
Except we know that somebody is always maintaining Warehouse 13.
Yes. Oh. Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, I'm sorry. I had to.
Well, I just one of those things. It's like why are we having these people? Like, you should be, like, putting them, like deep within, like a you know, some unforgotten, or shoot them into Jupiter somewhere or something like that, where these people can never be.
Find Uranus, drill away all the way to the core, insert them, seal it, blow up the planet.
Well, Kirk was a...
Did you say Uranus?
Uranus.
So you want to pee on them? Take Uranus.
Pack it full of 70 people.
Drill a core. Pack it full of people.
Oh my!
Absolutely nuke it from Earth orbit.
Well, no, I mean they don't want to kill them because Kirk had the issue. He was like, "You want us to just shoot 72 dead people into Kronos?"
I didn't say kill them. I just mean like put them so far away where nobody's.
They have the moral issues. As an outside observer who has seen the different iterations of this that have been repeated,
it's always Starfleet.
End it now.
Yeah, Starfleet just cannot get it through their heads. They're always like, we got those super augments. We could use them.
Why don't we go and find them and see if we can? No, the temptation's too great.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no. Remove temptation.
That's right.
Because if we don't go and mess with it, then somebody else will. Somebody will find our archives. The Romulans will find out about it. And they'll be like, oh, hey, guess what they have?
Yes, exactly.
Cocaine.
Why is your face white?
Because I'm British.
I thought you were Indian. This movie doesn't make any sense.
It's a complete cluster from one end to the other.
I know.
It makes sense at the beginning than it does now.
It's just like, so yeah, I guess in the end, my feeling with this movie is that it was, it's
convoluted.
That was shame on you.
This is very true. Very true. In the end, my feeling is that this was a very pretty looking film.
Contrived.
Oh man, you're killing me.
A table is about to be flipped in some
conquest.
Controversial.
Is there anything else you want to bring to this?
Faith, you got some more?
I just said it's a pretty controversial one.
Yes.
There you go. There
controversial!
At least I'm out of range. I'd apologize, but I wouldn't mean it, Aaron.
I know. No, I just said, I guess in the end, I'm going to throw this huge thought out here about this movie, is that I feel like there could be two things happening. One is that either J.J. Abrams and crew don't believe that their viewers and their, you know, the Star Trek fans have enough brain power to actually make the mental leaps that they could have explained things or could have told better stories.
They don't.
Well, they already said as much.
Or is it that the younger viewers don't have the pure thinking ability to execute, say, why did they do that? Why did they do this? Why did they, you know, like, where...
You mean, you know, like a laziness?
Yeah. I don't know. And I don't want to... I'm not beating up on younger viewers either, because I know this... I mean, they want to bring younger viewers into this movie, but there's so many problems with this movie.
Well, the point, actually...
Well, I mean, I'll say it. I'll flat own it. This is slack.
Oh, yeah,
this is slack. It's designed for people that are lazy intellectuals, and I don't like that.
Yeah.
Well, like, Red Letter Media puts it great in the first review he did for the Star Trek 2009. This movie was made perfectly for the dim-witted masses, for mass consumption,
right?
For anyone to be able to be able to digest. And the one of the things I forgot to mention earlier that I really wanted to bring up tonight was that the reveal where John Harrison is Khan means absolutely nothing to anybody.
No.
It doesn't mean anything to people who aren't Star Trek fans, because when they go, I am Khan, that means nothing, because the non-Star Trek fan has no reference to who Khan is.
If you're a young kid seeing this movie, you don't know who the hell Khan is.
So that moment
unless
means...
you happen to be our kids, and in that case, you know, if you're my kids, you know exactly who Khan is.
That's a different story.
But yeah, but I mean, like, for the person who's never seen Star Trek, that means nothing. And for anyone who has seen Star Trek and knows it well enough, you should have been able to deduce Khan was the bad guy from watching the trailer.
Right. Well, exactly. I just
listened to the trailer and I picked up on that.
It has so many good potential. And, you know, me and Dave, we were talking about this before, and before we started recording, was that the problem with J.J. Abrams, I find over and over again, is that he has a lot of good ideas, he has a lot of good beginnings, but he doesn't know how to wrap it up. He just doesn't know how to take a story and, like, and tell it competently in the end. A movie that he did recently was Super 8, which has a lot of heart to it, has a lot of good like a good storytelling, but at the end is so mundane and stupid by the time you get to the end of it. I mean, you should see Super 8 just for the fun of it, but I mean, because it is a good movie, it's worth seeing, but like I said, the last...
It just ends on a thud.
Yeah, it's like you could not watch the last 15 minutes and be like, I don't know what happened, but I think I'm all right, you know, because you...
I'm good with this.
Yeah. Lost is the same thing. Lost has so many cool things going on about it, but it was just like...
Fringe
was great.
Fringe was great. The last two seasons were like, I don't even know what the hell they were thinking.
They lose stamina.
Yeah.
It's like he has this awesome idea, and then like halfway through, he's like, wait. It's like you're going to the kitchen to go and get something. You get to the kitchen, and it's like... What was I going to
get? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that is exactly. It's like, why did I come in this room? What was I coming to get this room for?
Well, luckily, Star Wars Episode 7 is technically sort of kind of the first part of a three-part arc. So, hopefully, since he doesn't really have to end it, because it'll probably be a cliffhanger, because it's the first part of a new trilogy, hopefully it won't suffer from that I don't know how to end the movie.
Right.
Sad logic there is that Star Trek was technically already being looked at for the third one when they were doing this one, so he shouldn't have been doing this.
Well, let's hope Disney has some pretty wicked people to rein him in and at least get the stories out there.
He can save anything.
I think he has a lot of good qualities about him. I think he has good ways of developing characters and making you identify with characters and making you understand and make everything look good, too. But I don't think he has anything else. Like he doesn't know how to start from point A to point C and get to the end and make it wrap up and make you go like, wow, that's a great ending.
You know? No, I agree with that. He's got the creativity. There's a lot of substance there. There isn't any stamina.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, man. I don't know. It's not my favorite of movies. I think it looks great. I think it's pretty, but that's about it. I don't think it has the story really falls apart on me.
There's good one-liners. Like I watch it. I watch it. I listen to it more than anything at work because I like being able to hear like the different one-liners and things like that. But that's really all it is for me.
It's got some great one-liners. And if you're just listening to it, some of the music cues almost sound like something out of Star Wars.
Oh, they're beautiful. Like I thought I was playing one of the old Halo games because it actually has the softer cues in and then it'll fade out. And like it's some absolutely beautiful orchestra music. Like I mean, it is just gorgeous. But that's really all there is.
I actually have the soundtrack. It's nice orchestra music, except every single song hinges on the same one
that
theme.
That hook, yeah, that one.
Like
hook.
That one hook is in all dun, every dun, single.
Dun, 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 dun,
it's like, come on, guys.
I mean, it's
at least
good,
cut
it's
that
good,
piece out.
It's a good hook, but every single track has got that in it.
Well, it has a nice piano part where they see with the sick kid. That's a nice part. It sort of reminds me.
It made me think of the Red Queen a lot from Resident Evil, though. The intros and extras for her, because it was very, very similar. Marilyn Manson is the one that did the instrumental music for the Red Queen in Resident Evil. And like it's got that really haunting three-note melody that sort of is overlaid over itself. And like it has this really haunting intro, and it's so distinctive. And the piano music for when they're showing the sick little girl, the first time I actually ever got to watch this movie was when I was working, so I could only hear it, and it caught my attention to the point where I actually dropped what I was doing, turned around, paused it, backed it up. I was like, that sounds the same.
It's weird because it reminded me of a Stevie Wonder song called They Won't Go When I Go.
That's a good one, too.
Yeah, that's what it reminded me. It's not the same, but...
when Scotty's flying around...
It's a sentiment.
Yeah. Flying around the Section 31 base, it's very reminiscent of Star Wars. I want to say, like, Return of the Jedi.
Yes.
Right there.
Stay on target.
Well, how about the scene, too, where he was chasing... They were getting chased by the Klingons, and the ships made the sound of the TIE fighters flying.
Oh, yeah, and, like I think there's a couple like sounds that sound like R2-D2 a little bit whenever the ship's getting hit.
Right.
Like,
well, it's obviously, I mean, everyone knows.
Well, episode, I mean, Star Wars, Star Trek and Star Trek in the Darkness, or was J.J. Abrams' resume to do Star Wars episode 7.
Right, and not just that, but I think he was always trying to make Star Trek into Star Wars.
Yes, especially in the first one.
Right.
And this one, they try to make a Dark Knight analog in Star Trek by making it dark and saying dark in it. And, you know, I know
almost we're, got there.
I know we're a Star Trek podcast, but I definitely want to do an episode when Star Wars Episode 7 comes out so we can kind of talk about it versus the J.J. movies and how we think it stacks up with J.J.'s films and if it's similar to Star Trek in ways. I mean, that way that could be our, like, you know, our official Star Trek versus Star Wars episode. So we'll be teasing that instead of the Klingon episodes.
next Christmas, this upcoming Christmas, right?
Yes.
So I don't know. I think this movie has a lot to offer. I think it's nice eye candy. It has a lot of things for it, but I just think the story's a little dull.
It lacks the meat.
Yeah. I mean, and
it had such a great setup. Like, come on, it's Khan.
It's got great setup.
Great actors.
Great actors, great acting, great special effects. But it was all fluff and not a whole lot of substance.
It's no substance. And here we're coming off of Wrath of Khan, where you have a limited budget. I mean, obviously there's special effects, but they're not as grandiose as Into Darkness. Even the sets and everything are very limited. I mean, they reused the bridge.
And obviously recycled.
Yeah. And
like a lot of those sets were completely recycled.
Storytelling is just so much better.
So much better. Mm-hmm. And
because that's why you don't see things like that, is because they get you so wrapped up in what's going on and what they're telling you that it's like, it makes sense. Because what they're telling you makes sense. And it's like, okay, this is fine.
Yeah.
I mean, the issue is, it's just that, they made a reboot series so they didn't have to adhere to the old canon and do something new.
Which is cool.
And they're not doing anything new.
No.
I mean, you've got Khan, and I mean, I don't mind bringing Khan in, but I mean, like, I wish they would have left Admiral Marcus as the bad guy, maybe changed things up and made Khan, like, sort of a sympathetic...
Well, they tried...
Anti-hero.
They tried to make him almost sympathetic when he's sitting in there crying about his crew.
Yeah, but then you just turn him into the bad guy again. I'm like, oh, they should have, like, made Admiral Arcus the big bad. Right. And maybe Section 31 the big bad. And then maybe them take... Like, that would have been a little bit more interesting than just turning Khan into the villain again. I'm just like, well, that's already been done.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, they have a lot of potential, and it's a shame to see them waste such a huge budget and such wonderful cast and crew on... fluff.
Yeah, and
like, I mean, it's crap.
And everybody, I mean, the 2009 reboot, I thought had some promise. I wasn't my favorite, but I thought, you know, they're moving in the right direction. And this one I saw, I was like, especially the direct ripoff callbacks to Wrath of Khan, I thought was completely unnecessary. We didn't need to put any of that in. I mean, Khan is a great villain. You don't need to do anything more than that. So,
or don't make him the villain. Make him make Admiral, do more with Admiral Marcus. Make him more the villain.
Right.
Because he was.
Or accidentally kill him right out the gate and then have a different member of his crew. I mean, my God, the possibilities are there.
Yeah.
Like, they're realistically there.
I mean, like, that's what I was thinking. Like, people were complaining that Khan was white instead of Indian. I'm like, well, maybe it's not really Khan. Maybe he's just saying he is.
Because, yeah.
You know, that's a good point.
Because, I mean, there was lots of...
In space, there's
lots of white people who he woke up.
Everything together just seems like it's just like... there's a lot of things that were unnecessary or just not thought out thoroughly enough, yes. You know? And there's a lot of things I just wish they would have just... spent more time with the writing.
Yeah, exactly.
I appreciate the ship explosions, but can you actually work on writing something of substance, please?
Right, yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Don't treat me like a 2-year-old.
Yeah.
Treat me like I'm a grown adult. I can adult.
Well, and do we attribute that to younger viewers? Do you think that younger viewers are not demanding more from their movies? I mean,
no, I don't think some of our generation too. I think it's across the board.
I don't think they are demanding more from their movies because, I mean, I know Justin Lin's directing Star Trek III, Star Trek Beyond, Star Trek Into Darkness. It did well in the theaters, but I was reading demographics and it had a really hard time attracting the young, you know, teenager to young 20s something demographic. Whereas Fast and the Furious always get that demographic and right. They're repeat viewers. So, I mean,
right.
it really is. They're not, I mean, I'm sorry, Justin Lin. I'm sure and hoping you're doing an amazing job with Star Trek Beyond, but I mean, the Fast and the Furious movies just don't have a lot of substance. They're all just hot chicks, fast cars, and explosions.
Right. Well, those are sort of the meathead movies anyways. I mean, I mean, if you like them, you like them. But it's like, I can't be bothered.
But you're asking, you know, if the young viewer not asking. They're not asking for more. They're asking for exactly what Fast and the Furious gives. And
right. Well, a couple of the Fast and the Furious movies, actually, the first one, the second, and the third actually had stories. Whereas the fourth and the fifth were all explosions and crap. But the original ones actually did have a great deal of story to them because they had to explain the backgrounds of the different characters. The last two are very, very close to the way that Into Darkness was done because it was a whole lot of shiny special effects, no substance at all. Hmm. Like there was very little focus on the story beyond what was necessary to generate a pace that was fast enough that the viewers, by the time you actually stopped and went, wait, that doesn't make any sense. The movie was over.
Right. And my thing, too, is, like, I mean, I've talked to a lot of younger, you know, sci-fi fans, and they, you know, when we talk about, like, Star Wars, they talk about how they like the prequels better than the originals.
Mm-hmm. Hurts my head.
And it's like, why do you like that? I mean, it's like
the special effects was gooder.
Because it looks cool.
Yeah, it looks cooler. It's like, but the stories are goddamn awful. I mean, just like, George Lucas
completely...
George Lucas just completely lost his mind. Phantom Menace is just such a terrible story.
Oh, well, good news. I did read today that J.J. Abrams is saying no to midichlorians in Episode 7, so there should be no mention of midichlorians at all.
Well, that's
in episode
cool,
7.
Too. Oh. But, I mean, it's just like this, like, but what, in like, you know, I would talk to him, like, why do you not like the original, I mean, the original New Hope Star Wars? And they're like, you know, like with the beginning, first 20 minutes is a bunch of droids, you know, going through the desert, you know, and it's like, okay.
Well, in the middle of Attack of the Clones is a bunch of droids doing nothing but going through a conveyor belt.
Right, exactly. I don't know.
Recycling scenes much?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, maybe the younger viewers are not really, they're just more into, like, just what's
shiny.
Pretty. Yeah, it's like, this is pretty, I like that. I don't know, and I don't want to, you know, put down younger viewers either, but I do feel like there might be some correlation there.
Well, you know, I agree with that. I also think it's, because I run into a lot of people in our age groups and that have no idea what Star Trek is or what it means or any of that. And maybe it's just the gaming crowd that I run through and whatnot, but it seems to me to be fairly even split. It's not just the young guys, it's the gamer genre that has been completely jaded by, oh, hey, it's pretty and it's shiny, it's a nice candy eggshell, whereas they don't care what they're playing,
right.
Like why they're doing it, they just like the way it looks when they do it.
Right, and I think that's a big issue. I just think that there's a lot that we don't, you know, like, people are turning off their brains and not trying to be challenged in any way, you know, through their stories. And, I mean, I know we're just talking about, you know, TV shows and these movies. Even the original series, you know, they're just goofy TV shows.
But, I mean,
shows.
Even though it's entertainment, it doesn't mean it can't be
It shows a difference from intellectual stimulation to people that are closed off, self-centered, and into instant gratification.
Right. And I always felt like, you know, we talk about that, is that, you know, the original Star Trek was always had, not always, but often had an underlying theme that was trying to challenge you on a different substance, you know, that was trying to, you know, on some, you know, sociological topic or something political that's happening and make you think a little bit differently about it. Maybe see a different perspective where we're not seeing that at all.
Mm-hmm. It's not even, oh, hey, that's a different way of doing it. It's no, here's Uhura bitching for no good reason.
Right.
Which I get that the argument, like, I can understand from a relationship perspective and trying to get people on that same level of belief to understand that and to try and evolve all of that. Like, I get it and I appreciate it because it is supposed to make people think, well, hey, maybe I shouldn't do this in my relationship because this is how it looks.
Right.
Yeah. But still...
Yeah, and
opening the canned meat.
Yeah, and my thing too is like, you know, maybe the whole con, you know, blowing, you know, Section 31 and flying the Vengeance into San Francisco has like a calls to 9/11, and it maybe has some echoes of what you know what we've done as America and stuff like that with our foreign mm-hmm. policies and stuff like that. You know, maybe it has some echoes to that, but it's not well enough. Put there, it's just sort of like a shadow that you could read anything into, you know. So I don't know. It's just like it's so
it comes so close.
Yeah, it has like these things that could almost, and then it doesn't.
Yeah,
it just lacks,
and it's disappointing.
Yeah,
because it's like at least if you're gonna fall flat, don't give me the lead in. Don't build me up. Don't get me excited about what you're doing, and then just go not doing it.
Right, right.
Pop gotcha. Goes the weasel.
Yeah, exactly. Right? It could have been. There could have been a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Justin Lin, please don't disappoint us. Justin Lin, also please come on the show. we would love to talk with you and hear your thoughts on Star Trek, and share Star Trek with your younger friends, people. Star Trek needs a younger generation to really survive.
Absolutely.
And
I have my kids watch it all the time.
Yeah.
Same here.
You know, show them this podcast
if you maybe not my kids.
Maybe for the old audience.
When they're old enough, share this with your friends, because this is something that we're here to care about, and we want to grow our audience. We want to reach as many people as possible. So please definitely give us a share, a like, a review on iTunes. We could definitely use any of this stuff to help us attract more listeners, because we love Star Trek and we want it to survive and want it to get out there, and we want people to, you know, enjoy what we have to offer. And if you enjoy it, let other people enjoy it.
Yeah, and if, you know, like if you want to tweet out an episode that you like, that'd be great. Let your friends and people know. Facebook, you can, you know, share a link, you know, on Facebook if you have that as well. You know, if there's an episode you like, you want to share people, your friends and other people that might be interested in that.
Message us and let us know which episodes you like. Tell us why.
Oh, yeah. Interaction is huge. I mean, I try to be very vocal on our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/synthaholics. We have an email. Synthaholics@yahoo.com. We actually do have a new email. We have a suggestion to do an episode on the Prime Directive. We'll probably get to doing that at some point. That was from Andrew Dumais, who was on our Doctors episode. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't get a lot of emails, and we want to be interactive with you guys. So please email us. Please join the Facebook group. Please, you know, post stuff that you want to, you know, us to answer on the air. We want to be interactive with you guys.
Yeah, definitely try to get out, you know, and we, you know, we're all very friendly. We won't bite
hard
much.
Not unless asked, and I try to behave.
Ah. You're no fun.
Oh my. Thank you all for listening. I hope you guys have a great day, evening, whenever you listen to this. Make it great.
Yes.
Thank you all for listening. All my music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or follow them on Twitter at warp11. You can find us at synthaholics.com. You can email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at synthaholicduo. If you'd like to follow us individually, you can follow me at David_J_Duncan.
You can follow me, Aaron O'Brien, at Blackbird2004. Faith, where can they find you?
You can find me at Faith Hertzberg.
And please subscribe to us. We are on iTunes. We are on Stitcher. And if you have a chance, please rate and review so we can improve. And any feedback is welcome. And so we can make the show even better for you.
Live long and prosper, guys. The stars we did gaze. The next morning he left stinking of gin. Well, McCoy, my boy, come mix me a drink. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink. And we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever Why am I not recording this wonderful, wonderful things we've just said? And then I start recording as I said that, so that way people are like, what did they say?
What did they say? They said Alfred's brown eye. Batman, we have to save Gotham.
Hunter of the Light Man. Woohoo! Master of friendship and karate.
You are my pupil. I am the mentor.
You are my sunshine.
I am.
Testing mic check. Hello.
Testing mic check. Testes.
I found testicles.
Testicles. Oh,